It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich and Ken, Christian Arcan will be in just a moment, and we are down at Fenway Park right now before the crowd. A little bit of riot. Oh, there we go. Some Yankees gear. I see.
There we go.
Waiting for the New Yorkers. Knicks fans too, probably.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Wouldn't doubt it. Well, we are at the Ford Clubhouse at Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. And employee pricing for all. You pay what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball. And that dirty water. Well, one of the biggest stories of this NFL offseason wasn't a trade. It was a scandal. One between our own Mike Vrabel and Diana Rossini, the NFL insider. And we all saw the pictures that came out. We all saw the very strange boat rental where she was pregnant and they took pictures with people. Of all the pictures that came out, the ones that made me like, how could you just be so cavalier with this relationship?
It was a bonding exercise.
Sure, that you just took photos and then don't tell anyone. Media and of coaches, course everything yeah. breaks and then this all happens. But the New York Times, who is the parent company of The Athletic, which is of course where Diana Rossini worked, they put out an article yesterday. And it was a pretty extensive article going through some of the new findings that they came up with that is really, it seems to me like it's a teaser for when the actual investigation that The Athletic is doing about Diana Rossini drops. Matter of fact, I don't really know what the purpose of this article was. It did have some interesting things in it, but a guy who's been on top of this entire story, and we've had him on before to talk about it, and amongst other things, is the great Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Mike, thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Guys, how's it going today?
Yeah, good as always. All right, so, you know, we were just talking about this. What do you think the purpose of the New York Times coming out with this article yesterday was when it seems like we're kind of on the horizon of the actual big drop that of the investigation that The Athletic has about Diana Rossini?
I think they felt compelled to engage in some form of journalism as it relates to the biggest off-field story that the NFL has had since the Super Bowl. And my first thought when I saw it was, The Athletic's report of its internal investigation must be coming soon, and they wanted to get ahead of it, and it may very well be the appetizer for what The Athletic is going to eventually publish. Whether they publish it internally, externally, doesn't matter. If they publish it internally, somebody's going to leak it. We're all going to see it at some point, and my guess is it's coming next week, maybe Thursday, maybe Friday. Perfect midsummer bad news dump right before 4th of July.
right. Like, it's going to be Thursday, like Thursday afternoon. Everyone's already got off on their vacations. You know, like, you know, you got the D team that's on like ESPN the next day. So, yeah, I could totally see that happening. But it is weird, wasn't it, Mike, when you're reading an article written by the parent company of the company that's doing their own investigation? It seemed very strange because, like, are they going to tell you everything? Because if they find something bad, that makes them look bad.
Well, and nobody from the Times or the Athletic would speak on the record about the situation to the New York Times. And you make a great point. That was something we wrote today. And I have found 5, 6, 7 different items within this longer article that I think are interesting. But they mention, kind of in passing with just one paragraph, the Julio Jones trade from Atlanta to Tennessee that happened in June of 2021. They don't mention that Vrabel was the head coach of the Titans at the time. And there are some interesting aspects of her reporting from right around the same time that could be used to make the argument that something fishy was going on, that there may have been an effort to help the Titans get Julio Jones. And to not mention any of that, I feel like that at some level there's a desire to ensure that no one takes a step back and says, what did The Athletic know? What should it have known about who they were hiring when they hired her in 2023? So I think that's out there too. I think there's some not so subtle CYA to avoid that question of why did The Athletic hire her in the first place? If there was evidence out there, if there were rumors out there, if whatever was out there, what kind of a vetting did they do?
Yeah, because it seemed like they played dumb in the article, too, because there was a story that they mentioned that was on a podcast she was on. I think she told the story with Stu Gatz, and it was about how she got pulled over, and to get out of a ticket, she asked the officer, who's your favorite football coach? And she got him on FaceTime to get him out of a ticket. And I believe that their quote was just like, well, we're just now finding out about this because she did not ask us to go on a podcast. Once again, doesn't that also seem like everything that's going to come out is just going to make the company that's writing the article look bad? So I question how much they're actually going to release.
Yeah, what it means is they were paying attention to nothing that she was saying on any of these various platforms, or if they were, it never dawned on them that there was anything about it that seemed off base in any way. And look, it's one thing to not just pay the ticket, but leverage a relationship with a coach to try to get out of the ticket, but then to go talk about it publicly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just judgment lapse on top of judgment lapse. And yeah, maybe the Athletic knew about it and didn't think anything of it, or they're hiding behind this clause in her contract, and all those contracts have it in there. You got to ask for permission. And at the end of the day, nobody does. They just do whatever they do. But what you say is out there. Anybody that wants to know about it, wants to hear about it, can find it easily.
Well, Mike, there was a lot of nothing in there, but as you point out, there are a couple things that you do pause. Like, so she emailed the publisher of The Athletic and two senior editors at the Times to ask to make a text that she had said to a reporter off the record. That is kind of interesting that they put that in there. What do you read from that? What's that mean for the next wave?
Well, anybody who is in the media business, who is engaged in any type of reporting, who has gone to journalism school, and I didn't, but I've kind of learned over 25 years what the rules of the road are. If you just talk to a reporter, anything you say is on the record. You've got to say off the record, and they have to agree to it before anything you say is off the record. And there have been people within the NFL ecosystem that have gotten in trouble with that, whether they knew or should have known better. Sean Payton, a few years ago, if you remember, he said a lot of stuff about the Broncos and former coach Nathaniel Hackett to Jarrett Bell of USA Today, and it made a big uproar. And the reality is, he just forgot to say off the record before he talked to Jarrett Bell. He intended it to be off the record, but somebody who's been doing it for as long as Payton has should know to say, this is off the record. And Russini should have known, or did know, that you have to say off the record. You don't just start responding to a reporter who's asking you for an interview and then at the end of the text message try to say don't use any of this in your story. So that was just kind of odd. And we've seen this, you know, this effort to kind of go around and go over people's heads and complain to people. And I mean, there's a level of aggressiveness that comes through that makes me wonder what's going to happen if and when The Athletic releases its report. Is there going to be something in there that causes her to take some sort of action against The Athletic? I think that's part of what the Times Company, The Athletic, and The New York Times are trying to balance here.
Oh, wow. So you think that she, like, from what comes out of this, she could probably try to, like, sue them for, like, what would she sue them for? I mean, because obviously they're probably not going to release anything unless it's well-researched. I got to think of the New York Times. They've been through things like this before.
Well, a defamation of character case would be very difficult for any public figure to make because the standard is much higher than what it would be for someone who isn't a public figure. But when you consider that all she's said so far, other than what she told the reporter before she tried to take it off the record, is that nothing happened. There's nothing to see here. This is all something that the media made up that is unmoored from the facts. That was from her resignation letter, and she hasn't said anything since then. So if she insists that there was nothing there and these reports and these comments and whatever The Athletic may find that she did, however they characterize it, nothing stops her from doing it. It may go nowhere, but nothing stops her from doing it.
What do you believe Diana Russini's next move is?
I think she's going to resurface somewhere as a podcaster, a radio host, an opinion maker. And I think there will be an element of reporting that maybe trickles into what she does, even though she won't be a reporter. There's plenty of radio hosts who quote-unquote know people and who quote-unquote hear things and share them. And, you know, if it's right, hey, I'm right. And if it's wrong, oh, it's just what I was hearing from somebody I know. So if she's able to maintain a network of people who talk to her, she'll be able to weave some reporting into whatever it is she does. But I suspect at some point, and I don't know where it will be, but at some point, at the right time, she'll resurface with, even if it's her own podcast, that she starts from her house. I don't think she's going to go away forever. We know, you know, no matter how, and I'm not trying to say this is worse than that or that's worse than this, but for pretty much anything, once enough time passes, everybody forgets about it and moves on, and people who go away for a while, they come back, and it's like it never happened.
Do you think if she, because I was thinking at first that she'd have to address this at some point, like she would have to break the dam, like her first big appearance, she would have to address it. But then I was thinking, she's paid off. She doesn't have to address it. She can just kind of move on. Do you think that that's realistic, that potentially she could be paid to not say anything?
Well, I think that there's always a chance that she's going to agree to sit down with someone and do an interview. As long as the interest lingers to interview her to get her story, that possibility is going to be out there. And one of the things I've been saying about the Patriots week one game at Seattle, Wednesday, September 9, Tuesday night, September 8 would be the perfect time for her to sit down with Oprah or whoever and tell her story. I don't know that anyone's going to care by September, but look, here we are 2.5 months removed from it, and it's still a big deal. So I've thought at some point that's one of her options, to tell her story, whatever her story may be. Nobody knows what her story is because she's hardly said anything about it. That may be her way to kind of get back into the mix, depending upon how compelling the story is, depending upon whether or not it generates any sympathy or people understand her side of it. Again, we're just guessing because we have no idea what she would say if she would do an interview like that. But to me, before the Times report came out, I thought there were two ways that this story could get more oxygen. One, the Athletic's report of its internal investigation, and two, when she tells her story, wherever she tells her story, however she tells her story.
Were you surprised, Mike, that the Patriots did get that opening game?
Yeah, yes and no. I know the NFL's position is it was too hard to resist having a Super Bowl rematch right out of the gates, but they've had Super Bowl rematches before that weren't right out of the gates. It's only the third time it's ever happened, dating all the way back to after the Vikings and the Chiefs played in Super Bowl IV. So it was surprising. I don't know that the average football fan has the appetite to tune back in for the first game that they'll watch after the Super Bowl and see the same thing that they saw from Santa Clara, because that's the reality. And we always remind ourselves of this at NBC since we have the first game every year. There's a lot of people who are going to tune into that game on Wednesday, September 9, who have been paying attention to not very much at all. And I don't know how many of those people are going to be thrilled. Now, I still think there's a chance the Patriots could win the game, but the fact that the Super Bowl itself just felt like one of those old 70s-style suffocation Super Bowls, yeah, it's easy to make the argument that there are more compelling opponents on Seattle's home schedule.
Mike, there was something in this article that I want to ask you about. I totally forgot about it because I don't know how odd this is. And there was a – God, I wish I had the article in front of me on how they worded it, but it was something along the lines of when Vrabel had was done with the Titans – that she was basically someone helping guide his career, like she was a helper, maybe keeping him in contact with the powers that be. It almost sounded like she was acting somewhat as like a mini agent for him. Do you have this right? Oh, you have it right here. It says,
yeah, like an unofficial advisor.
Yeah, that's what it was, like an unofficial advisor to Mike Vrabel. Does that happen with insiders, or is this something completely out of bounds?
One of the realities of this entire situation, and I know that the people who are quote-unquote insiders get nervous about this, it does expose a lot about how that business works. And I've written about it. I've spoken about it. When we see insiders breaking transactional news when someone signs a contract, it happens all the time now. An agent will send out a text message to multiple people at the same time, and then it's a race to see who can be the first one to copy it, paste it, and post it on Twitter. It happened yesterday with Brandon Strange's contract, because I don't try to get those anymore because, number one, my audience doesn't care that that someone else had it before this other person.
But right,
second,
right.
I don't want to play this game where I've got to, in order to be at the front of the line, I've got to make sure I name the agents and put the Twitter handle of the firm. And I got the text yesterday on Brendan Strange, and I sent it to my staff, and I said, you watch and see how many people tweet exactly what was texted, and at least two of them did.
Yeah. So it was just, that was a weird thing in that article. I didn't really understand what they meant by that they were, you know, like she was helping him out that way. It was kind of wild how many Titans games she covered as a national reporter. Like it was like half a season essentially that was down there. It's like now that you see all this stuff, it's like how many people must have known, right? I mean, I don't know how you can do what they did and people around you just not know what was going on.
And I think this is the core issue as it relates to the New York Times and the Athletic. The Times has a very high bar when it comes to journalistic standards. But I think when you're hiring someone who's covering the NFL in that insider role, You just want the information. There are certain things you don't care about if you're the producer, if you're the editor, if you're the network. And you could argue that if this story had emerged while she was working for any other company, and I'm not going to name any, I'm just saying anyone other than the New York Times, where that bar is lower, maybe they just kind of turn a blind eye to it, because at the end of the day, it's effective. It works. It gets you news. That's why they're there. And I think there's plenty of people in management positions that don't care how they get it, as long as they get it.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing that's going to get them, I think, in the most trouble is if they find out that there was some sort of way that the trade market was manipulated because of her relationship. Like, that Julio Jones thing is interesting. I mean, that truly could have, I mean, and we don't even know what else there could be. I mean, that's like the first one that you see, and obviously the most obvious example. But if there comes out proof that, you know, their relationship manipulated that, the Times could be in legitimate trouble.
Well, and I know a lot of Eagles fans were upset about the perception that there was reporting that potentially impacted the A.J. Brown trade to the Patriots, that maybe the Patriots got better terms because of some of the reporting. So I would expect that The Athletic is taking a close look at everything she has reported that relates directly or indirectly to Mike Vrabel during the 3 years that she worked for The Athletic. I don't know that ESPN is doing anything. I reached out to them. Once we saw the photos that the New York Post published right before the draft of Vrabel and Russini at a bar in New York City, which I think those photos were a lot more "we know what we see here" than the original photos that came out, I reached out to ESPN to see if they were doing anything, and they aren't saying anything about this. I think from their perspective, they don't want to dredge up any of this, but you raise fair questions. What do people know? When did they know it? And ultimately, do they care? If there was anything going on that maybe wasn't something that satisfies strict journalism standards, do they really care, or do they care about getting these stories before anyone else does?
Well, we will find out when the investigation is released at 5 p.m. on July 3rd. Right when
that'd
everyone...
be too obvious, though, right? I think it's going to be Thursday, because Friday would be too obvious. And I could see The Athletic talking themselves into doing it Wednesday, because Thursday would be obvious that you were trying to avoid Friday. So maybe it's going to be Wednesday, July 1st.
I like it. Place your bets. We'll see who's the closest. All right. Well, great stuff, Mike Florio. We love having you on. ProFootballTalk.com. And obviously all over the interwebs. Thanks for coming on, Mike. We appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see you, man. Yeah, that article was interesting, but it just seems like they're putting stuff, they're getting you ready for
phase one.
Yep, this is phase one. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like. It felt like, just get ready, here we go. I also think they tried to put in that thing, she didn't want us to publish this her text to us, but we're going to publish it anyway, right, to try to make it sound like we're going to be real tough on her when we release this. They're tattling on their own company. I don't know how like...
How can you not get the editors to comment?
Right. It's like right. The New York Times cannot get a comment from the New York Times on this article. It was really freaking weird. All right, we have to break, but we'll be back in 2 minutes. Christian Arcan is here.